Georgina Boys begins a new three-part series of English folk songs in recordings made over the last century. Lost Voices.
'Twas in the pleasant month of May, in the springtime of the year. 'Twas down by yonder meadow, there runs a river clear. See how the little fishes, how they do sport and play, causes many a lad and many a lass to go there a-making hay. Then in comes the scytheman that meadow to mow down, with his old leathered bottle and the ale that runs so brown. There's many a stout and labouring man goes there his skill to try. He works, he mows, he sweats and blows, and the grass cuts very dry. Then in comes both Tom and Dick with their pitchforks and their rakes, and likewise black-eyed Susan, the hay all for to make. There's a sweet, 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 and a jug, 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 how the harmless birds did sing from the morning till the evening as we were haymaking.
That song of Bob Copper's, with its images of haymaking by scythe, country lads and lasses, flowing ale and melodious larks, encapsulates all that we think of as characteristic of English folk song. When we think of English folk song at all, because the idea of folk song in England is something we find slightly embarrassing. As a culture, we suspect that folk music is rather like wearing a beret, something best done by foreigners, and preferably abroad. Worse still, if we really have to listen to it, we divide into self-appointed sophisticates who dismiss the whole genre as crude, amateurish and passé, or well-meaning advocates who mutter vaguely about fresh, unconscious poetry and poignant simplicity of melody, then switch off their critical faculties and hope fervently that it won't go on for too long. For most English people, a long weekend discussing varieties of lino seems a more enticing prospect than the performance of an English folk song. Why this came to be is one of the things I'd like to use these programmes to examine. The vernacular singing and musical traditions of England are creative, vibrant, stimulating and interesting. But they're not much liked or understood, and what little is generally accepted in the way of information about them is inaccurate. So, where to begin? A folk song is, presumably, sung by and among the folk.
Lord Bateman was that noble lord, a noble lord of some high degree. He shipped himself on board of a ship, some foreign country he would go see. He sailed east and he sailed west, until he came to proud Turkey, where he was taken and put in prison until his life did feel quite weary. And in this prison there grew a tree. It grew so large and it grew so strong, where he was chained around the middle until his life it was almost gone. This jailer had but one only daughter, the fairest creature my two eyes did see. She stole the keys of her father's prison and said, Lord Bateman, she would set free. Now have you got houses, have you got land, and does Northumberland belong to thee? And what would you give to that fair young lady that out of prison would set you free? Yes, I've got houses and I've got land, and Northumberland belongs to me. I will give it called to that fair young lady that out of prison would set me free.
When Percy Grainger released that commercial recording of Joseph Taylor in 1908, it was publicised as an English folk song sung by a genuine peasant folk singer. As Grainger wrote in the promotional leaflet, these peasant songs are born out of germs and traditions very many centuries old. They stand for all that is most native and racial in the musical life of Britain, and are the outcome of an unconscious inner productivity which, uninfluenced by the art music of this or other lands, has gone its own way, unnoticed and unapplauded for hundreds of years, humbly and untiringly piling up the great store of British traditional music. Both Joseph Taylor and his ballad of Lord Bateman were clearly meant to meet all these requirements of the folk and their songs. But what we know of his life bears no relation to that definition. Far from being a peasant, Joseph Taylor worked as a bailiff on a large estate in Lincolnshire. He was 75 when he made a series of exemplary cylinder recordings of 32 songs, scarcely the action of a man daunted by the latest technology. And as for being uninfluenced by art music, Percy Grainger himself reported that Taylor had sung in the local church choir for the past 45 years, and had come to his notice by winning the folk song section of the North Lincolnshire musical competition. Joseph Taylor's case is typical. No one living in England in the early years of this century could possibly fulfil the definitions of the folk propagated by contemporary folk song collectors. Their depictions of awestruck anonymous yokels sunk in ancient ritual had no existence outside the pages of textbooks.
Well, you're ready, you lazy little rascal. Hold together, the maid of the mill.
True, the Morris dancers, who brought some of the most attractive music to contemporary collections, were mostly agricultural labourers. But even when they first came to the attention of collectors towards the end of the 19th century, they weren't found in remote, out-of-the-way places. They lived in busy villages and small towns, like Bampton in Oxfordshire, where this recording of local dance tunes was made by the fiddler Billy Wells in 1931. The world of these modern villages was linked by railways. Their children went to state schools. Local newspapers had printed annual reports of their performances from the late 1850s. And they had a clear idea about their own traditions. In 1912, the Oxford Times carried a letter from Mr. Franklin, a local Morris dancer, complaining about the harmful effects of folk dance collectors' interference on performances of his village's dance. As for the miners, who formed most of the sword dance teams recorded in the north of England, they had a history of political organisation from the later 18th century. Their unions ran newspapers. They built chapels and set up Methodist circuits. Many lived in communities that had libraries and schools by the 1830s. At Earsden in Northumberland, where this tune comes from, the sword dance was a traditional Christmas custom, but only by willful misrepresentation could its aware and politically active performers be seen as the folk. So, if there were no folk, what about folk song? As a defined category of English music, folk song is less than 100 years old. The group of academic musicians, folklorists and music critics who came together to found the Folk Song Society in 1898 were searching for sources for a national style of art music and a means of restoring an older, more deferential form of English society, removing the threats posed by the advance of popular culture, ever-growing cities and democratic politics. Though only a handful of them had actually gone out to meet the peasantry and collect folk songs themselves, they believed that in the heart of the countryside there was a barely surviving oral tradition of music and song which encapsulated all the values of the English race. English folk song was the obvious solution to the problem of foreign domination in the concert hall, a salvo fired at the symbolic hegemony of Higher Germany.
Well, dearest Polly, the war it had begun, and I will march away by the beating of the drum. Come dress yourself and all your best and came along with me. I'll take you to the war, my love, and I a Germany. My curly locks I will cut off and mince clothes I shall wear. I'll dress myself and man's affair, and with you I will stare. We'll stop at every alehouse and drink when we get dry. We'll be true to one each other and get married by and by. I'll buy my Polly a pony, and on it she shall ride. I'll buy my Polly a pony to ride all by my side. And when we are in fight with sword in hand, and the silver drums will merrily sound for to drum all dismal cries.
Higher Germany, sung there by Phoebe Smith, a traveller, recorded in 1969. Scores of composers found inspiration in music collected in the English countryside. Vaughan Williams used a variant of that tune for his English folk song suite. George Butterworth, Percy Grainger and Gustav Holst turned taproom and cottage favourites into symphonies, concertos, operas and incidental music. Like Eliza Doolittle, folk songs were given a sophisticated polish, remodelled, and went out to triumph at society occasions. But again, as with Eliza, their language remained problematic.
I took a stroll one day, it was in the month of May. Of course that would be in the summer time. When I meet a pretty maid, and on to her I said, may I wind up your little ball of yarn? Oh, no, kind sir, she said, you're a stranger unto me. You had better go to those who got money and gay clothes for to wind up a little ball of yarn. But I took that pretty maid and I rolled her in the shade not thinking I was doing any harm. While the blackbird and the thrush sang loudly on the bush, as I wound up that little ball of yarn. Then that pretty maiden rose, and placing down her clothes, straight to her mammy she did go. I tripped across the plain, afraid I might be seen, after winding up a little ball of yarn. Now come all you fair young ladies, and a warning take by me. Never you be led astray. Listen what I say, a warning take by me. Keep your hand on your little ball of yarn.
Charlotte Reynolds, with a jaunty bit of advice on knitting. The lyrics of many folk songs were nowhere near as satisfactorily pure as their tunes. This was especially unfortunate for the leading collector and folk song theorist of the time, Cecil Sharp. Sharp revitalised the Moribund Folk Song Society in 1904. He argued that folk song had a unique mission. The folk were rapidly dying out, but they could be replaced by a new generation who would inherit their cultural legacy. The mind that has been fed upon the pure melody of the folk will instinctively detect the poverty-stricken tones of the music hall and refuse to be captivated and deluded by their superficial attractiveness. Some folk songs might, of course, be offered to a juvenile audience unedited.
As I walked out on a bright holiday, small rains from the skies didn't fall, and our Saviour asking leave of his own dear mother if he should go play at the ball. Go play at the ball, my own dear son. It's time that you were gone. And don't let me hear of any ill doings at night when you come home. Now our Saviour walked down unto yonder town, as far as the holy well, and there he met three of the finest children that ever any tongue could tell. Good morn, said they. Good morning, then, said he. Now, which of you three fine children will play at ball with me? Now our Saviour built a bridge with the beams on the sun, and over he walked, and the three jolly children, they followed him, and drowned in they were all three. Then upward ball, and downward ball, their mothers they did a wall and squall, saying, Mary, mile, fetch home your child, for ours they are drowned all. Now Mary Mile picked an handful of small with thee, and laid our dear Saviour across her knee. And with that hand full of small withy, she gave him slashes three. Oh, cursed be to the bitter withy that has causeth me to smart, to smart. And that shall be the very first tree that shall perish right at the heart.
Traditional carols, like the Bitter Withy, sung there by William Payne, gave a warmly human face to religion. Like any village child, it said, Jesus might be disobedient and in need of the firm parental discipline of a willow cane. It was all appropriately of the folk. But Sharp wanted to make the general public aware of a much wider range of the songs that had provided self-expression and entertainment for out-of-the-way corners of society. Though in the case of shanties, improvised work songs created and performed for men during their long periods away at sea, traditional content, styles of performance and language were felt to be unsuitable for children and adults. The published versions of Tom's Gone to Hilo told the patriotic story of a heroic tar's progress from Liverpool to death with Nelson on the Victory at Trafalgar. As collected locally in Bootle, the story's more down to earth.
Tommy's gone on a whaling ship away to Hilo. Oh, Tommy's gone on a damn long trip. Tom's gone to Hilo. He never kissed his gal goodbye. Away to Hilo. He left her and he told her why. Tom's gone to Hilo. She'd robbed him blind and left him broke. Away to Hilo. He'd had enough, gave her the poke. Tom's gone to Hilo. His half he went, it went like chaff. Away to Hilo. She hung around for the other half. Tom's gone to Hilo. She drank and boozed his pay away. Away to Hilo. With a weather eye on his next payday. Tom's gone to Hilo. Oh, Tommy's gone and left her flat. Away to Hilo. Oh, Tommy's gone and he won't come back. Tom's gone to Hilo.
It wasn't just the forthright treatment of sexual relationships and explicit language of sailors and such. Collectors could edit and soften, turn overt commercial propositions into demure proposals of marriage at the stroke of a pen. But the words of folk songs were still fundamentally problematic. Folk songs were supposed to be an entirely oral tradition, handed down over generations by word of mouth, products of the unlettered folk. At the same time, though, broadsides, printed song sheets containing versions of what were now accepted as folk songs, had been sold in streets and markets throughout the country over several hundred years. Joseph Taylor's version of Lord Bateman, for example, may have been based on a medieval story, but his words are almost the same as those appearing on a broadside printed among the crowded tenements of the Seven Dials in London. Still, a song like The Irish Captain can't possibly be a folk song, can it? Its text is obviously based on a broadside, and worse still, it's performed with no recognition of the well-known fact that folk tunes are pure melody, and that the folk are incapable of harmonising.
We had not sailed many lengths at sea before our ship we spied, she being some lofty Frenchman come a-bearing down so wide. We hailed her off from my boys, she asked from where we came. Our answer was from Liverpool, and London is our name. Oh, pray, are you some man of war, or pray, what may you be? Oh, then replied our captain, and that you soon shall see. Come strike your English colours, or else you shall bring to. Since you're so stout, you shall give out, or else we will sink you. The first broadside we gave to them, which made them for to wonder. Their mainmast and their rigging came a-rattling down like thunder. We drove them from their quarter, they could no longer stay. Our guns did roar, we made so sure, we showed them British play. So now we've took that ship, my boys, Godspeed us, fair wind, that we might sail to Plymouth town if the heavens prove so kind. We'll drink a health unto our captain and all such warlike souls. To him we'll drink and never flinch out of a flowing bowl.
Bob and Ron Copper from Sussex. Songs sung by the Copper family appeared in the first issue of the Folk Song Society's journal in 1899. Even the most hidebound purist accepts that the Copper family has a long tradition of singing. But in the narrow sense of the word, some of their oldest songs couldn't be classed as folk songs. It's a nonsense, and that, I think, explains the collective lack of enthusiasm we feel when faced with the idea of English folk music. How can anyone be expected to feel a commitment to music that's not supposed to have any individual creativity or spontaneous feeling associated with it? What sort of musical form is it that just exists without being able to grow or change or develop in any way? Fortunately, beyond the abstract nationalistic idyll that folk songs were supposed to embody, there was, and still is, a real England with singers and songs and a living tradition of singing that could be found in city and country alike.
Won't you buy my sweet blooming lavender? There are 16 blue branches, one penny all in for bloom. You buy them once, you buy them twice. It makes your clothes smell sweet and nice. Come, all you young ladies, and make no delay. My lavender's fresh from Mitcham, and we're round once a day. Some are large and some are small. Please take them in and show them all. Was early this morning when the dew was a-falling. I gathered my sweet lavender from the valley all in full bloom. Now's the time to send your clothes and pocket handkerchiefs and to keep those moths away. Won't you buy my sweet blooming lavender? There are 16 blue branches, a penny all in for bloom.
Sweet blooming lavender. That was the voice of Janet Penfold, one of the last of the London street sellers. And that ends today's first instalment of Lost Voices. Georgina Boys will be back next Friday afternoon at the same time, 4:30, with step and Morris dancing and Northumbrian pipe playing, and more English folk songs, including Hopping Down in Kent, and the ballad of the Copshaw Home Butcher, and the Chambermaid, who offers services not normally listed in the hotel guides. That's all in a programme called Incest and Folk Dancing. The series producer is John Thornley.